Welcome to National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN Republic Broadcasting. Is that how I start the show? I think that's how I start the show. RepublicBroadcasting.org. It's the black and white movie of free speech, because all the movies today suck, but there's some good black and white movies back then. You go back in the day, and some of those are worth watching. Dr. Strangelove, which was from 64, so it was in the color era, but they made it in black and white, and somehow that made it better. So RepublicBroadcasting.org, send the fundage to 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Phone it in to 1-800-724-2719, extension 3. This is part 2 of the Patrick and Jeremy Show. Jeremy, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Patrick. It seems like only a few minutes ago that we did part 1.
It seems like only a few minutes ago we did part 1. It also seems like well over an hour ago we did part 1, because we lost a lot of the first recording. And we're trying to make up for it.
So we were on the topic of Jewish power as the West collapses and Russia and China dominate Eurasia. I think that the Jews in Israel are figuring out how to make alliances and how to redo alliances. And I was comparing that to the movie Key Largo, Edward G. Robinson's character, Rocco. So if you remember the movie, you know, they force Humphrey Bogart, you know, Rocco's the Jewish gangster. He and his gang force Bogey to sail them to Cuba with their ill-gotten goods, and they're forcing him at gunpoint. But Bogey sneaks a weapon in on the boat and turns on them when they're distracted, takes out Rocco's men, and Rocco's down in the cabin. Bogey's up on top. He's got the high ground. And all he's got to do is wait for Rocco to come out, and he can shoot him. And so Edward G. Robinson's like, yeah, see, Bogey, we can split the money. Yeah, see, I'll give you all of it. You know, and so that's how I picture the Jews in Israel, is they're, as the table turns, you know, they're going to make alliances with maybe countries that they wouldn't normally want to make alliances with. I don't know. What do you think of that reference?
So, yeah, and what my reaction was and still is, Jews are not a monolith. I think what's going on right now in the world is a massive – it's a massive defeat for Jewish power centered in the United States. And, you know, we think of Jews in the United States, these diaspora Jews, and we think of them as having dual loyalties, or maybe singular loyalties to Israel. I think that the Jews tend to think in terms of what's good for Jews. But the diaspora Jews think what's good for Israel tends to be good for the Jews. Now, there are times when there are differences, but I think Israeli Jews think what's good for Israeli Jews is good for the Jews. And I think the Israeli Jews care a lot less about diaspora Jews than diaspora Jews care about Israel. And so I could see a humiliating defeat for, Victoria Nuland and the Jewish power structure within the United States. And, the Israeli government under Netanyahu or whomever saying, hey, maybe we can join BRICS. And I don't know if they would be welcome in BRICS, but
yeah, we can split the money, boy. See? Yeah. But no, and the more we talk about it, I mean, the more that I see, it's not really a centralized power structure, you know, with Jewish power. I mean, you think about like Adelson supported Trump, you know, you have Adelson and Netanyahu, huge Trump guys, against the Iran deal. But then you had the Jews under Obama that were pushing him were more for the Iran deal. So you definitely see difference of opinion there. It's not necessarily centralized. I think just genetically they operate in a certain way, but they're at odds on a lot of things. We brought that up in the last discussion.
Yeah, I mean, for like the Iran nuclear deal, and right. the point person on that, it was the same Jew crew in charge of the State Department then than it is now. I mean, under Obama, okay, you had John Kerry was Secretary of State, but the number two person was Blinken. Number three person was Wendy Sherman, and she was the person who was in charge of the negotiations with Iran. And then Victoria Nuland was doing her Ukraine stuff back then. So it was the same group, basically. And they were for this deal with Iran, not because the deal was good for Iran. And I remember David Duke was very much against the Iran nuclear deal because he thought it was bad for Iran. I think the Iran was stuck between a rock and a hard place. I guess it's stuck between Iraq and Afghanistan, which is kind of the same thing geographically. But, you know, if the because the Iran nuclear deal forced Iran to submit to all sorts of inspections that nobody else does. I mean, there goes way beyond their responsibilities and requirements in the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty. So they have to do all this extra stuff. And what do they get out of it? They get out of it their own money that had been right. frozen 40 years earlier. Okay. So the West, meaning the Jews, had frozen their money. Like what was it? 80 billion or with interest, 140 billion or something like that. So there's all this money that had been frozen at the time of the Iranian Revolution. It was Iranian money. It's like, okay, yeah. we'll give you back your money that's rightly yours, but you're going to have to jump through a whole lot of extra hoops to get it. So it wasn't like it was a good deal for Iran, but the alternative was war, basically. It was being attacked. I mean, that was the great fear. And, of course, Netanyahu wanted war. He wanted the U.S. to attack Iran. He didn't want the U.S. to regime change Russia. That was not his priority. But for the Jew crew at the Pentagon, at the State Department, it's like, no, we want to go after to Russia. Iran, that's down the road. That's not our top priority. We want to clear the deck and get ready for Russia. That's the way I see it.
Think about what the media did when Obama gave that cash back to Iran. They like. Put it on headlines, and Fox News is like, look at Obama giving you know, the enemies of American Israel cash. Think about how the media treated that. That's just the, you know, the same Jews that control the media, I mean, are kind of lashing out at the Jews that did the Iran deal. I mean, so you could see the back and forth there.
Yeah. And, you know, I think, like, for Victoria Nuland, was she motivated to overthrow Putin because of American national interests? No, I mean, I think she's completely motivated by like an ethnic hatred, not just an ethnic hatred, but also that Putin, who had been put in power, you know, he'd been recommended as a prime minister, kind of plucked out of nowhere to be prime minister of Russia in order to save the Jewish oligarchs. And then once he consolidated power, he turned on the Jewish oligarchs. And I think that was something that was completely unforgivable for the for Jews like Victoria Nuland, who already didn't like Russians and Slavs. And so I think that she was operating out of what she perceived as Jewish interests. And like I said earlier, I think the Israelis, what's good for the Jews – you know, what's good for the Jews is what's good like Israel, and Israel has an oversized importance to Israeli Jews in terms right. of what's good for the Jews. And so I think there's a certain difference of opinion on that. Anyway, so I'm just bringing that up. I don't think Israel is going to get into BRICS, because I think BRICS, the countries that are likely to get into BRICS, there's a fair number of Muslim countries that are likely to get in. Like, I think Egypt's already applied. Egypt's not that. Saudi Arabia's applied, and Saudi Arabia is now has a peace deal with Iran. Iran, I believe, is applying. And Iran has been admitted to another important organization called the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, which has a military aspect to it.
I mean, in light of that, I mean, like, unprecedented alliance between Sunnis and Shiites. I mean, in light of that, it wouldn't be surprising if Israel went into BRICS, especially as they see China and Russia becoming dominant on the global scene. Like I said, the Jews would want to latch on to whoever's dominant and then use whatever levers that they may think they have in the Belt and Road Initiative to their advantage. So I think that's the whole point of bringing that up is, you know, it's not necessarily that I think China is controlled by the Jews. It's that the Jews want to latch on to China if once they see China becomes dominant in that region.
So, yeah, the Israelis in particular, American Jewish diaspora, I think they have a lot to do with the anti-China hostility among conservatives. But the Israeli Jews, and it's not like I see these as being two totally different competing factions. You know, at the end of the day, they're all Jews, and but I do think that they sometimes perceive Jewish interests differently. And I've seen I have a Jewish chiropractor, and once I was at his office, and it was like late afternoon, and he gets this phone call, and you know, it's like on speakerphone. I can hear some guy with an Israeli accent, and he's saying, "How late are you open?" And my chiropractor says, "Oh, I'm leaving at 5," and the Israeli says, "Good, I'll be there at 5." He's no, I'm leaving at 5. Oh God! And he rolls his eyes and he looks at me and he says, "Israelis."
Right. Oh well. I mean, but it is interesting to you know study these different factions and how they interact with each other on a global scale. But so I think this whole discussion started with talking about RFK's comments on the vaccine.
Yeah, actually, I misspoke a little bit. It's on the virus. The virus was may have been genetically engineered, and at least that the virus is harder on whites and blacks than on Jews and Chinamen. That seems to be what he's saying, and implying that might be evidence that it was engineered to be that way. And, you know, if you're implying that there could be a biological weapon that was engineered to hurt the Goyim and not the Jews, that
right.
I think I said that is like crossing the Rubicon. Did that get in the last show? How do you come back from that?
And it could all be a distraction. I don't know. It's so hard to tell. They throw so much stuff at us. Did we exhaust this? Could we? Is it Segi or Segway?
I think we did. I think we've covered everything that we had lost and then some.
Speaking of distractions, so the movie about the child trafficking that's out, you know, that Mel Gibson talks about, he's like one of the presenters, Sound of Freedom, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I want to get your take on this. Like, why is it so popular? Why are they wanting us to focus on this? Again, I'm not putting my tinfoil hat on, but it just when they put something out there like that allegedly would expose, you know, this type of thing that people say the elites are involved in. Why do they want us to focus on that? Why is it such a high grossing movie? And you know, could it be that this is something to get the Republicans all ready, you know, all bent out of shape over and ready to go to the polls and vote against the evil Democrats that are trafficking children? I mean, is that the play there? Because, you know, there's some problems that we haven't solved yet, which is election fraud. That's not been solved. Mm-hmm. We haven't solved the fact that Epstein was using, you know, underage girls to blackmail our politicians for the benefit of Jewish power. That hasn't been solved yet. Instead, let's concentrate on this documentary so everybody can watch it and make themselves feel like they've done something by watching and talking about it. and then go right back to life as usual. That's my take on it. I mean, what do you got?
Well, to amplify what you had to say, I mean, we spent the first show talking about the coronavirus, and that's never been settled, right?
Right.
I mean, that's a big deal. And that's one thing that we might get out of RFK's candidacy is a much more thorough discussion of the coronavirus, because that was a lot of bull, and it can't just be after 2.5, 2 years or whatever. No harm, no foul. It can't be that. There has to be some sort of what do you call it? Not recollection, not even retribution, but there's got to be some sort of what is the term? I don't know what the term is, but we got to deal with that. You got all the anti-white stuff. You got the wars. You got all this stuff going on, and the tranny stuff. Even I mean, the tranny stuff is very much in our face. And I know kids who are saying they're trannies now. And this is right. So this really is it. You know, you might look at the tranny stuff maybe a few years ago. I might have looked at it and thinking, well, that's kind of obscure, but it's not obscure anymore. The child trafficking, how many Americans are, I don't know anything about this movie, but how many American kids are really alleged to be being trafficked? I mean,
right. It does really kind of focus on the immigrants, and again, another, all right, well, so let's close the border down. Are we talking about that? You know,
yeah,
or are we just going to talk about the child trafficking?
And that's just existential, and it didn't even make my list just now.
So it's, you know, we're looking at Mexican coyotes and these traffickers. Okay, shut the border down. Where are you at, Greg Abbott? You know, get up, you know, roll your wheelchair over to the phone, make some phone calls, and get the National Guard down there. No, nah, they're not going to do that. We're just going to watch a movie and talk about it. Pisses me off, man.
Yeah, so I haven't seen the movie. I do, you know, there's a whole bunch, there's like a whole bunch of media that, as a boomer, that I'm not even aware of, hardly, and yet that's really important with other generations. Well, and so the past...
Go ahead. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Okay, so like for instance, the past couple of weeks, I've become aware of a show called Fresh and Fit, which is these two black guys in Miami, Florida, and they had on Ryan Dawson and then Nick Fuentes and then Ryan Dawson again. I think David Duke wants to go on the show because he thinks that they would be fun to talk to, but I'd never heard of it, and yet. Apparently, it can get millions of views. It's like it's a big deal. So there are whole sections of the media that are really big and important, and I'm not even aware of as a boomer. And now some of you're probably aware. Do you know the guy named Stu? What's the guy's name?
Was it the dude Stu, on Fox News?
No, he's on. He used to be on with. Alex Jones, Stu, what's the guy's name? Stu Peters.
Okay. Yeah. I'm familiar. I don't watch him, but
yeah. And so Stu Peters, I think kind of came on the scene about 2 years ago. And, and I'm not trying to disparage him now. I guess he can be kind of funny in a way, but, I heard him at, Nick Fuentes's conference a year ago or so, or half a year ago. I guess Nick Fuentes had some conference and Stu Peters came.
There was a man who leads a life of danger. To everyone he meets, he stays a stranger. With every move he makes, another chance it takes. The odds are he won't live to see tomorrow. Secret agent man, secret agent man, they've given you a number and check it.
Let's talk Bidenomics. I'm Peter Serafin with another Liberty Minute. President Biden and his team are standing behind their economic record as Biden kicks off his reelection campaign. Let's talk about some numbers. $2.39. That was the price of a gallon of regular gasoline on Inauguration Day 2021. $3.56 was the average price yesterday. That is a $1.17 or 49% increase, which costs the average driver an additional $525 a year. So Bidenomics is not good on gasoline. 2.65% was the rate for a 30-year mortgage when Biden took office. 7.51% is the 30-year fixed rate today. That is a 283% increase that costs home buyers an extra $528 a month on a $100,000 mortgage. And those together, the Biden economy, costs the average home buyer with a car an extra $6,861 a year. So sure, unemployment is down, but Bidenflation is robbing all of us. Remember to listen what a politician doesn't say. Until next time, Sivas Pashem, Parabellum.
Did you know the IRS publicly admits that income tax is collected by voluntary compliance? Get the information you need to help you avoid income tax with these five easy steps. All you have to do is go to avoidincometax.com to get your five easy steps on how to avoid the IRS income tax. Escape the IRS. Let avoidincometax.com help you. We guarantee our five easy steps or your money back. Go to avoidincometax.com.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Paudi Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
Asian men, they've given you a number, and they've taken away your name.
But I heard him at Nick Fuentes's conference a year ago or so, or half a year ago. I guess Nick Fuentes had some conference and Stu Peters came, and Stu Peters was making a speech where he was lashing out at Marjorie Taylor Greene, which is kind of funny, but then he said nobody's talking about the biggest issue in America right now, which is child trafficking. I thought, how's that the biggest issue? Or maybe he said it was the biggest issue at the border. I can't remember exactly, but it seemed like a weird thing. And I'm not like accusing him of being any of a plant or anything. I don't know hardly anything about him, but it's weird, like, especially if this issue is mainly kids coming into the United States. So what are going to be the proposed solution? Like family reunification? What is it?
Yeah, let's just bring their whole family up here.
They're not going to shut down the border.
No. And I'm not putting the movie down. Look, I haven't seen it. People that are really intelligent, that are, you know, pro-wide, have watched it, and they said it angers them and brings them to tears. I'm sure there's good content. I'm sure there are people that were involved in it, in the making of it, that had good intentions. I'm just saying, like, what's the media using it for? Why are theaters promoting it? It's just something to think about. As we have all of these other problems, you know, crashing down on us. So we pretty much have the same take on that. you know, what are the solutions? Yeah, child trafficking is a thing. It's horrible. So let's talk about Epstein then. You know, nope, not going to do that. That's swept under the rug. I haven't even heard anything about that, or Ghislaine Maxwell, or any of the bunch.
So, like, I haven't seen the movie, but what have the children been used for? One of the things they've been used for is to get unrelated adults into America. So the way the INS, the Immigration and Naturalization Service, or the Border Patrol, the way they've been handling families is different from the way they've been handling adults without children. And so a child is a valuable commodity. If you're an adult, you know, whether you're male or female or a couple, if you can gain access to a child and then you say you're a family, your odds of being able to stay in the United States are greatly increased. The only people they're not sending back families. They have been sending back adults without children. So I don't know what point the movie's trying to make, but this has been something. There's been, for years, there's been a great deal of criticism that they're letting in so-called families without having any idea of whether they actually are families. And then there was all of this outrage during Trump's administration when the so-called families were being separated, but in a lot of cases they weren't really even families in the first place.
Yeah. So I mean, there's that. I mean, snatching kids, you know, for the purpose of using them, you know, to get your entire crew in the U.S. Definitely, there's that.
Yeah, and then some of the kids are teenagers and are, you know, gang members, or they're going to be gang members.
This is 10-year-old little Jimmy, this is 10-year-old little Jose, with gang tattoos on his neck. He's really like 26 and like 5 foot tall. Anyway.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. What else is on the docket today? I think we covered lots of ground, man. Extensively covered Jewish Power, the COVID.
Look, we got
the child trafficking movie.
We got half a show left, and we could talk about anything.
Well, so what's up? What's new? I just feel like so much stuff is distractions, because we don't ever get anything dealt with. You know, it's like I'm still figuring out we're still talking about the COVID stuff, and they're like rolling all this other stuff in front of us. It's hard to keep up with. You know?
Yeah. Well, okay. I mean, there's an awful lot of unfinished business, and most of it's going to stay unfinished. I mean, look, the Kennedy assassination from 60 years ago is still unfinished business. Pearl Harbor is unfinished business. 9/11, of course. There's just an awful lot of unfinished business. I don't know. I mean, so many things are going on. You got the black stuff. You are getting some developments there. You had the Supreme Court decision that Harvard and University of North Carolina can't use race as a factor in admissions. Now, I just saw data. Was it from Ron Unz? I mean, if it's from Ron Unz, then it's completely solid. But the class admitted to Harvard for the last school year, or was it for 2021 or for 2022? I can't remember. Was 18% black?
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Consider this. dead people see only what they want to see. And frankly, most of us are still dead. Let me give you the lessons of gold and five easy lessons. Number one, don't buy it because you need to make money. You buy gold because you need to protect the money you already have. Don't ever look at the price as a barrier. Look at it as an incentive. Number three, don't buy its paper pretenders. We talked about that a lot. Buy gold. Buy the real thing in the form of coins and bullion. Fourth, don't fall prey to glitzy television or Facebook ads. Do your due diligence instead. And that's what I try to provide you with and have for 26 and a half years on the air and 30 years in this profession. Fifth, don't allow naysayers to divert your interest. Allow yourself the right to protect your interests as you see fit. Jeff Bennett here. One of the ways you can do that is to contact Kettle Moraine Limited. Contact me by calling or texting me at 602-799-8214. 602-799-8214. You can also email me at kettlemoraineltd@cox.net. Let me help you protect your wealth and your family today. Once again, call or text us at 602-799-8214 or visit our website, SierraMadrePreciousMetals.com. Be glad to help you out. Be glad to answer your questions. That's what we're here for. No pressure, just good, hard, common sense. The decision then becomes up to you.
Standing 6'4", weighing in 245 pounds of crime-fighting, political science, analyzing brawn, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Patrick Slattery.
So, Mike, get off this anti-cicada agenda.
I'm a born-again traditional Christian, and my favorite possessions are right here on my nightstand. That would be the King James Bible and my .357 revolver.
I'd rather be ruled by Chinamen than Jews.
Cool it with the anti-Semitic remarks, right?
Just because you steal an election and terminate the republic doesn't mean you terminate the people in the republic, because we're still here.
I'm not taking the vaccine. F*** you, Bill Gates.
There was a way forward still on January 6th. What needed to be done is to object to every single state.
The COVID-19 virus was the setup. The vaccine could very well be the bioweapon.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show. Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
The class admitted to Harvard for the last school year? Or was it for 2021 or for 2022? I can't remember. Was 18% black? 18% black. Now, if it's 18% black, what could the non-Jewish white population be? It may well be that they're admitting more blacks than non-Jewish whites at this point, not just on a per capita basis, but on an absolute basis. And this is it's just completely insane. I mean, whites have been absolutely shut out. I would suspect that probably the only white men being admitted to these institutions now are gay. You know, there's this one guy at the University of Chicago who was on Tucker's show, and he was making a bit of news because he was like a straight white guy at an elite school. And it's just so unusual now.
Well, and as we operate, like in the last four decades, it seems like we've been sort of a critarchy. I mean, all of these judges, where do they come from? Harvard and Yale. I mean, so now we're going to get blacks and gays and Jews making the most important decisions and doing national injunctions. Yeah.
So, yeah, but of course, well, yeah, but now you had that decision, and you do have on the Supreme Court, you know, what else is going on there? You had last year the Roe versus Wade get struck down, and you've got right now, it's not as if any of these people are dependable. Like, probably the most dependable person is the black dude, Clarence Thomas.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, it is refreshing to see the Supreme Court give a nod towards states' rights, I guess is maybe what you would say. It's refreshing to you to see, you know, them make this ruling on Harvard and Yale. But, I mean, how effective really is it? Like, does this thing have teeth? Or is Harvard and Yale really going to abide? What are they, you know, what's the court going to do if they don't?
So they see with the blacks, it's tough. It's tough with the blacks because, you know, they have these very, very subjective admission criteria, which they've had for a while. And some of the origins of these subjective criteria, such as essays and things like that, some of it actually dates back many decades to when they were trying to keep the Jewish enrollment down to 15%, which is still a massive overrepresentation. And but at any rate, I've seen these essay questions, and the essay questions can be, you know, what do you bring to the diversity of our school? But regardless of what the question is, it provides opportunities for all sorts of signaling. Now, in the case, the thing is, because there aren't really official figures for how many Jews are in these schools, Ron Unz was able to use a variety of means for getting good estimates. You know, not just the Hillel publishes data. Hillel's data, is it entirely accurate? It might not be, but there's other ways of looking at it. For instance, you can look at the programs for graduation. You know, so there's a graduation program. Everybody's name is on the list. Everybody who's graduating. Well, you can look at that those names, and if you know that, like, you could compare it with lists of synagogues, and if you've got like lists of synagogue membership, and you see that names ending with Stein and Witz and, you know, certain Shapiro and things like this, if that makes up, you know, 40 or 50% of the synagogue membership, and then you look over at these graduation lists, and you can count up those same names, just multiply by two, and then that's how many Jews you probably have. That's one of the types of things that Ron Unz was doing to figure these things out. But at any rate, where was I going with this? The Jews will probably continue to get in because they weren't getting in through official affirmative action. They were getting in through this unofficial favoritism based on things like, you know, the essays. But also, you know, when you're submitting the applications, they also ask for a resume, a kind of resume. Well, if you put on your resume, yeah, I volunteered at the Jewish Community Center. There you go. These types of things indicate that you're Jewish. And
my grandma was a Holocaust survivor.
Yeah. And Ron Unz said that specifically. You put that in your essay, and that's like a ticket to ride. With the blacks, because the blacks are identified, they do keep official data on blacks. And the blacks do so poorly on admissions tests. I mean, they do really poorly on the SATs and the ACTs. So what the schools have been doing is they've been saying, okay, the tests are optional now. And one after another, they're saying they're optional.
Well, I can see why the Supreme Court ruled this way. I mean, they're probably, over the last four decades of affirmative action in Harvard and Yale, you probably got a lot of poor performance from these black judges that get selected from there. And so they're like, yeah, we can cut the blacks out now. It's not going to affect the Jews because, you know, what are the Jews going to do? Well, I'm white, you know, I'm a fellow white. So it looks like that you got white dominated Harvard when really it's Jewish dominated.
So the benefit to having from the point of view of the Jews, the benefit to having all those blacks and Hispanics at the elite schools is they just fill up seats that otherwise would go to whites.
Yeah.
Because the Jews can't get away with they can't get away with being 50 or 60 or 70% of the student body. They just can't get away with it. And you've got, I guess 1% of Jewish kids of college age are already at Harvard. 4% of Jewish kids of college age are in the Ivy Leagues. And then there's lots of elite schools outside. So, I mean, the Jewish kids, they have no trouble getting into elite schools. They can't fill them up. There's just not enough Jews to fill them up. But they don't want these places filled up with whites. So they're trying to fill in as many seats with random people who aren't white, or, you know, who are women who are going to be feminists, or homosexuals. They just don't want straight white men in these institutions. And so that's the whole reason for bringing in all the diversity.
Well, but then your answer to my question is, does this have teeth, and can they affect it? Well, I mean, they probably have enough diversity now that it's probably, we're past the point of no return where it doesn't matter anymore.
You know, that may well be. And you look at the demographics in general, already maternity wards are majority non-white. Mm-hmm. Public schools are majority non-white.
Look at a daycare, even in small town Mayfield here. Mm-hmm. I mean, just look at the daycare or the park. It's like 75% non-white.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it's because these farmers are bringing in all the Mexicans. Dude, like, it's 75% Mexican kids and some blacks. Like, the Mexicans are starting to almost outnumber the blacks. I'm not even kidding, dude. A daycare, a playground in the small town Kentucky.
You know,
and the elementary school in the city is like 60% non-white.
This is a bellwether. I remember going to England 40 years ago, and I went to a small city called Wolverhampton, and I was walking past the school, and I'm looking over at the school, and the schoolyard, half the kids were playing were South Asian. They looked like they were Sikhs. You know, they had the particular hairdo. And I thought, wow. I mean, well, you didn't see that all over the place. But now 40 years later, you know, Britain's got a subcontinental prime minister. Scotland's got a subcontinental first minister. You've got the Pakistani mayor of London. I mean, you know, they're taking over. So you have to look at who makes up the younger generation. And that's what's happening.
Yeah, what? I mean, it does. It really does, like, hit you in the face when you look at these, like, especially just a small town area. I mean, what's going on in the big cities? I don't even know about Louisville. I haven't been there in a while. Frankfurt, Lexington. You know, it's got to be way worse.
Yeah, I mean, the cities are long gone. So I don't know. I mean, life continues to be interesting, and people are going to have to figure out a way to make something of it.
Well, I mean, so people are just, you know, going to gravitate to the rural areas. We talked about this 3 years ago. You remember we had the show on Patrick and Jeremy, country folk are much better than city folk, or something like that. You had a way of putting it, but you know,
that's no, they're more badass.
Badass. That was the word you used. Yes. Yes, yeah. very, very political science of you, sir. But no, I mean, people are gravitating toward the rural areas. I mean, you had this whole shift of people after the COVID left these big cities after COVID and BLM. Real estate went through the roof 2 years ago here in small town West Kentucky. I actually sold a house I was in on with my mom. I mean, it should have been like a $60,000 home. We got $100,000 for it because of all of the real estate being bought up by all of the, you know, well-to-do whites that were leaving the big cities and coming out to the country to live. And I think that as you see this progress, if things don't get better, if something doesn't break, I mean, you're going to eventually see a South African-style scenario. I brought it up before. It does sound doom and gloom and you know, Mad Max tier, but I don't know how else it's going to go. Where white flight, you know, happens, you get the whites moving out to the rural areas, and they'll eventually come for us.
Well, here's something else. So when the whites move out to the rural areas, right. Are they what attitudes are they bringing with them? Are they just transplanting all of their attitudes? You look at Austin, Texas. Austin, Texas is in the middle of Texas, and I would bet that 40 or 50 years ago, it was much, much smaller. I mean, now it's huge, and it's super liberal. Boise, Idaho. I mean, people have been moving to Boise, Idaho, and I think a lot of them are coming from the West Coast. And are they bringing their attitudes? From what I hear, they are.
It's a liberal attitude, but I think the whites that are moving into these areas, they understand race very clearly. They're not going to talk about it. They're not going to openly admit it. But they know why they left the big city. They're not fooling anyone. They know why they left. And it's just like, I think there was an article brought up yesterday on Richard's show. Areas like the Hamptons, I mean, they're not taking in immigrants. They're not housing immigrants in their hotels. They'll talk a good game and how we love immigrants, but they're not putting them in their communities. They're sending them elsewhere. So, I mean, these wealthy liberal whites, like, they don't want to live next to blacks or Hispanics. They're not gonna. That's why, you know, that's why they're moving to the rural areas. But I'm just making the point that eventually, you know, something's got to give. I mean, the country is split. I mean, there's two Americas, and the big cities are already unlivable, and they're just going to get even worse. Mm-hmm. You know, what's going to happen when these big cities and you know, start collapsing, right? And people in the rural areas are trying to maintain civilization. Well, I don't know what's going to happen.
I don't know either. Hey. We have like 7 or 8 minutes left, and this is kind of a departure, but I have a question. Do you think the Biden, the Brandon, is going to get thrown under the bus?
Oh, yeah, they're already doing that. I mean, think about how they've let the Hunter Biden stuff out. You know, of course, they're not prosecuting anyone. So what that means is they want to throw the information out there to discredit Brandon, but they don't really want to come down on him. You know, kind of like they let the Hillary server stuff go. I mean, that was kind of a way of throwing her under the bus without actually doing anything. No, they're not going to have the Brandon now. Okay, so number one, I don't think we're going to have a fair election, but we've already said that. So let me go on with the prediction. It's not going to be chlamydia. There's not enough popularity there. They're going to have to pull in Gruesome Newsom, bro. I mean, this dude's like 50s, early 50s. He's, you know, a nice looking, like he's a decent looking guy. He has aesthetics.
Gavin Winsome. Isn't that
Winsome? Yeah. You know, he's got the chin, bro. He's got like the Dudley Do-Right chin. He looks like a Baptist preacher or something. You know, he could like stand right next to Joel Osteen and preach. It's what he looks like. And this guy's popular. I think they're going to pull him in. That's what I think. I don't, maybe they keep chlamydia as VP because that, you know, who really cares? But no, it's going to be Newsom. RFK is just being used to basically split up the Democrat vote. And RFK also will split up the people on the far right. RFK is more popular with people on the right, I think, than he is with the Democrats. So, I mean, who knows? Maybe RFK is going to be like the Ross Perot, right? And just split the independent far right vote. So it's going to be between RFK, Trump, and DeSantis as to who gets, you know, all of those three. Wouldn't you agree that those three sort of are on the same platform? They're kind of on the same page? They appeal to the same voters?
I guess Trump overlaps with both of them. I don't know how much DeSantis and RFK overlap. Maybe they do.
Well, also, Vivek, I forgot about the dot-headed street defecator, Vivek Swamy. Swamy! I'll vote for you.
he's being astroturfed by Tucker Carlson. I mean, he's like totally a creation of Tucker Carlson. But it's interesting because nobody, maybe he came on a few programs here and there, but basically nobody knew who he was. And this, like, I'm old enough to remember Jimmy Who. And Jimmy Who was what they called Jimmy Carter, because nobody knew who Jimmy Carter was. He had been a one-term governor of Georgia. He was a former governor, and he was running. And the establishment just thought, okay, let's clear the deck in Dixie. Let's let Jimmy Carter run one-on-one against George Wallace in Dixie. to take out George Wallace, and then an establishment person like Humphrey or Birchbuy or somebody else can, you know, take the rest of the states and get the nomination. But Jimmy Hu, he got some momentum out of the southern states, and people were clearing the deck for him, clearing the way. And then he just rolled on and won the nomination on the first vote. And this is, if you look at other elections, I mean, maybe Jimmy Carter is the best example of somebody who just came out of nowhere. But you do have people who come out of nowhere and make a splash, even if they don't wind up getting elected. They come out of nowhere and make a splash. And even if it's not Gavin Winsom, it could still be somebody that we've never heard of, but who just becomes a media creation. And I guess...
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 keep it today.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
Hey there, are you going to wait till the cows come home to get your new Ease-Off drop-in lift?
What in the world is an Ease-Off drop-in lift?
Our Ease-Off is a new tool to increase production for your meat processing company that will get that whole hog or half a beef on or off your rail with our remote control.
That sounds great, but can I afford it?
Sure, and the Ease-Off installs fast. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue, speed up your line, and increase profits.
Okay, I'm convinced. Where can I get my Ease-Off?
Go to easeoff.com. That's EAZEOFF.com. And hurry, because we're offering free shipping for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff LLC, 417-932-6419.
Getting elected. They come out of nowhere and make a splash. And even if it's not Gavin Winsom, it could still be somebody that we've never heard of, but who just becomes a media creation. And I guess in France, Macron was probably that. Did anybody know? How many people really knew who Macron was in France a year or so before the election? So you could have something like that. I don't think it would be Vivek Swamy or whatever his name is, but
I just mentioned him because some people on the far right, you know, are really into that guy. And I'm not talking about pro white. I'm talking about like right wingers that would have went for Trump in the past. You know, those type of people. Mm-hmm. You know, they like the whole get rid of the FBI thing, and they like the whole all of that jazz, which is just nonsense. Nobody's going to get rid of the FBI. But no, my prediction is all right. You ready? Trump and RFK ticket. I know, but it's this out there, and then Newsom and chlamydia. That's my prediction.
Newsom and chlamydia.
Newsom's going to get chlamydia, is what I'm saying.
He's going to get chlamydia. You know, they're both from San Francisco, and there is a there can be a bit of a problem. Electors cannot vote for two candidates who are from their same state. So the California electors would not be able to vote for both of them.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's an obscure part of the Constitution, and it can be dodged easy enough. Like Dick Cheney was registered to vote in Texas when George W. Bush got him as his running mate, and so Dick Cheney just changed his address to I think it was like a hotel room in. Cheyenne, Wyoming, or something like that. So chlamydia could probably change your voter registration to Washington, D.C., and it wouldn't matter.
Yeah, there's ways around all of these laws.
There's ways around it. That's not a big deal. It's just... But she's not... She's ridiculous. I don't know. But
I just don't see. We're not going to get rid of chlamydia. I mean, we're stuck with chlamydia for a while. Yes. And as VP, that's my thing. Yeah, Newsom and chlamydia.
The burn and the itch and the pain. Losing pus.
We're about to lose our main prophylactic, man. The Biden. I mean, he's done. No way he's getting it.
Yeah, and with him, a lot of his Jew crew is going to leave. I think you'd get an entirely new Jew crew come in.
So, Patrick, are we keeping it classy? I mean,
yeah, it's classy enough. It's classy enough. Classy enough for RBN.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Well, I want to thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Patrick. It's been fun.
And it's been real. And it's been real fun. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Legal Radio.
Antelope Hill Publishing is America's leading publisher of dissident books, bringing you a wide variety of new translations and original works on every subject, from the funding behind the transgender movement to firsthand memoirs of World War II previously inaccessible to English-speaking audiences. We publish books that mainstream publishers won't touch, full of information that challenges the political status quo. Whether you count yourself as a political dissident, student of history, connoisseur of philosophy, or enthusiast of exciting and thought-provoking fiction, you owe it to yourself to check out our catalog. With exclusive offerings like The Transgender Industrial Complex, Solzhenitsyn and the Right, The Open Society Playbook, Opioids for the Masses, and many more, there's something for everyone, and new titles are added every month. Check out our catalog today at antelopehillpublishing.com and use code RBN Readers 2023 for 10% off your order. That's RBN Readers 2023 at antelopehillpublishing.com.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.